dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I am extraordinarily pleased to be escorting you about a bit of the battle space of the war for the free world with several of my favorite people, starting most immediately with Diana West. She is a columnist with the Washington Examiner, author of The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization. She is a marvelous contributor in any number of other capacities, but most recently as a star of Rumors of War 3, a documentary produced by Glenn Beck's team and aired last week. She also provided afterwards color commentary, along with Andy McCarthy and Jerry Boykin and one of Glenn's own people at The Blaze and himself, of course. And we've been following with great interest, Diana West, your musings about this bit about civilization jihad, a whole nother piece of the jihad that's waged against us. And I'd like to start with, you know, sort of as you developed it along with a number of other luminaries. I had a small part myself in the documentary, but some extraordinary work was done there, and not least by you. Tell us about this other piece. We're I have to say quickly, of course, marking the death of bin Laden this week, and a lot of thrashing going on about that at the moment. But there's this nonviolent piece of the jihad, and we seem still not to understand it very well. What's going on with that?
Yes, well, it is, to me, the key part of the jihad, because the rest of the jihad, the operational side of things, the hot war, the violent attacks, the attempts to hijack planes, even the wars themselves in the field, these are things that Americans, that our military and other services, security services, understand, can come up with any number of defenses against, can put up new metal detectors and bomb detectors and plastics detectors and everything else to try to keep this violence down. It's simply a matter of self-defense in the most physical and easily understandable sense. The civilization jihad is the hard part. It's the mental game. It comes back to what people at one time did understand in terms of the kind of chess game, as they used to style it, that existed between communists and the free world back in the day. This is the aspect that is kicked under the rug, and that I believe is really taking us down while we're in effect distracted by simply keeping the bombs from going off. And it has to do with changes in our laws, in our manner of speech, in our very thinking about the problem. And it comes down to why 10, 11 years after 9/11, and some decades after this all began, you could date it back to 1979 with the Khomeini Revolution, perhaps, we are still unable to have an intelligent, rational, unafraid discussion of what it is in Islam that is a threat. And that is where you come down to civilization jihad, which is being won by the jihadists.
To what extent, Diana, do you agree with me that, in part at least, this is a function, this unwillingness to recognize this other element of the jihadist threat, is a function of people who are very much determined to prevent us from understanding it, being able to exercise influence, in some cases actually being inside the proverbial wire, as they say, through which they have extraordinary opportunities to exercise influence, keeping us stupid, as one way of putting it, about this whole part of the threat. The Muslim Brotherhood most especially seems to be skilled at this and hard at it. Is that going on here too?
Absolutely. That, in a sense, you might look at that in a way as the second wave. The first wave is something we've done to ourselves. When we decided in our own society, that the world was a place where we no longer counted in terms of our own identity, in terms of our own contributions to civilization and our values, and we in effect abdicated any kind of self-preservation. The totalitarian wave of Islam comes along, and with its extremely able practitioners in the Muslim Brotherhood, in the Iranian lobbying group, in any number of mouthpieces going back to Yasser Arafat included, I mean, were able to play on these, what we sometimes lump together as Western guilt, self-abnegation, I mean, just this tremendous desire to crawl under a rock and just let the tides of civilization wash over us or wash us away. And so in this milieu, you do have this kind of encroachment by overt practitioners of taqiyya, of jihad, entering our government to the point where I will never forget the words of a military analyst, intelligence analyst, who said to me that after giving a brief on jihad doctrine to a very high admiral, the man said to him, "I will have to check with my imam on that." In other words, he could not judge the material for himself. He had to check with someone who knew it better, and indeed, in all likelihood, was someone who would like to see the spread of Sharia and would tell him how wonderful and peaceful the whole thing was. So that's the situation we're in.
Which brings to mind, of course, your term, taqiyya, the lying for the faith, as they put it. And Diana West, that's such a fantastically interesting story, because in so many ways it seems to be symptomatic of what is going on here at the moment. We had last week, and really nobody covers as effectively as you do, this kind of stealth jihad being waged against our military. But last week we had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, announcing that the military would follow the lead of the FBI and I believe the Homeland Security Department and other agencies of the U.S. government and ensure that nothing that would offend that imam would be left in the files of the military, at least with respect to training of our forces. And again, you've found any number of episodes in Afghanistan and elsewhere where we have in fact been submitting to these stealth jihadists. Give us a flavor of how corrosive an effect that's having on our efforts to prevail.
Well, it's the complete capitulation to Islamic law, which prohibits criticism of Islam. And it so happens that these materials, just by virtue of being factual, would be considered critical, or in the words of, I believe it was General Dempsey, derogatory to Islam. In other words, if indeed you're demonstrating principles of supremacism, of repression, of censorship, and so on, that are part and parcel of Islamic doctrine, well, that's derogatory to Islam, isn't it? So these materials, factual materials, are being purged so as to present a sunny, happy, daisy face to Islam for our intelligence and security professionals. And it's about the most chilling development I can imagine, except for one other, which is that it goes on unnoted. It doesn't get picked up by Mitt Romney in terms of discussing the perils to our nation on the campaign trail. It certainly doesn't get picked up by the media. So we are just being made defenseless, just paper by paper and bullet by bullet. I mean, it's truly a crisis.
Yes, it is. And as you have again documented, we've seen it playing out to the point where we're actually seeing our military put at risk in places like Afghanistan, where in the interest of not giving offense, they're forced to take off their flak jackets and their protective glasses and the like. Just speaking of Mitt Romney, I will say in his defense, there's an attack on him at the moment from the Obama administration. And to his credit, back in 2007, a statement he made is being excerpted and quoted out of context. But he does talk about the fact that we are confronting a very very diverse group. He says, quote, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood, and of course different names throughout the world. We need to be going after all of these people. He said it's, quote, worth fashioning and executing an effective strategy to defeat global violent jihad, and I have a plan for doing that. I think your point, Diana West, is that he needs as well to be addressing the so-called pre-violent forms of jihad, and we will be working with, I hope, you and others to make sure he does that. Diana West, thank you so much. Star of stage and screen and columnist at the Washington Examiner, and most recently one of the really extraordinary contributors to Rumors of War 3. Check it out at glennbeck.com. Diana, we'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, we have Faith McDonald to talk about not just rumors of war, but the fact of it in Sudan. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Faith McDonald. She is the Director of Religious Liberty Programs at the Institute for Religion and Democracy. She is a woman who I have come to know and admire greatly as one of our country's really foremost experts on a country that has been afflicted for generations and unfortunately seems to be in for much more of the same at the hands of the regime that's been responsible for all of it, one in Khartoum, Islamist in character, that is now apparently poised, if not in fact already beginning, a new war against the Christians and others in the south of Sudan, now a separate country, southern Sudan. Faith McDonald, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I'm always hoping that there will be some better news, and for a time there seemed to be, with the establishment of an independent state of southern Sudan. Tell us what's happening there now, and where is it likely to lead?
Yes. Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me. The news seems to change from day to day in South Sudan and on the areas that are in conflict right now in Sudan itself by their own government as well. South Sudan has tried to assert its independence, which it has a perfect right to. It is an independent country. One of the contested areas, Hejliz, was where there's an oil field, and the military of South Sudan had taken that area for about 10 days. What disturbs me even more than the government of Sudan's attacking of South Sudan and of its own people in the Nuba Mountains, because you expect that to happen, is that the world community has ganged up against South Sudan, and it really bullied South Sudan into pulling out of Hejliz on April the 20th. In fact, I just read that President Salva Kiir, the president of South Sudan, has accused the international community of deliberate failure to hold Khartoum responsible for border conflict.
This is unfortunately all too familiar to those of us who watched this story play out over the years. It seemed as though, whether it was in the south initially, whether it was in Darfur, subsequently in the Nuba Mountains, the so-called international community would turn a blind eye to whatever it was that Khartoum was doing, however horrific it might be. That seemed to change when the world recognized and introduced as a member in good standing at the United Nations this new nation of Southern Sudan. But you're signaling that what seems to be happening is in the face of renewed assaults, renewed aggression, renewed genocide, perhaps by the North, that this is going to revert to business as usual. Is that possible?
Yeah. Yes, it seems that way, Frank, although I think that South Sudan is going to fight for its freedom and its rights as much as possible, but the African Union, the European Union, and the Arab League all rebuked South Sudan regarding this Hejliz incident. And now there's also been an attack by Khartoum on Unity State, which is one of the states of South Sudan, and the SPLA forces have been pressured once again to say that they'll withdraw from the Abyei area. Now, this is another area. It was under contention because the North said it belonged to the North and the South said it belonged to the South. It's Dinka people who are Southerners, and with the peace agreement that was signed in 2005, the provision was that there would be a independent panel of arbitrators to decide where Abyei belonged. Well, they decided it belonged to the South, but because Khartoum wouldn't go along with it, all bets were off.
Yeah, situation normal. We don't like the outcome.
Right.
We're going to revert to the bad old ways. There are two things that I want to cover with you. And again, Faith McDonald is our guest from the Institute on Religion and Democracy. One is Southern Sudan's president was in China last week, as I recall, and there seemed to be some willingness on the part of the Chinese, who have a very big stake in the oil out of Sudan, to play some kind of mediating role. I'd like you to talk a little bit about how you think that's likely to play out. There's also this new, atrocities czar, she's been called, Samantha Power, who the president has put in charge of something called the Atrocities Prevention Board. What role, if any, does that seem to be playing in this atrocity or incipient atrocity?
Well, on your first point, it's interesting. Salva Kiir went to China. I've also heard that they've agreed to loan $8 billion to South Sudan. So
the Chinese.
I think, yes, the Chinese. I think for the Chinese, it's whatever's going to be most beneficial to the Chinese. And it may be that they've decided that that the South Sudanese are less crazy than the Islamists in Khartoum, and they want to try to to help stabilize things.
And a lot of the oil is in southern Sudan, so that is another reason to concentrate their mines. Is there a way, quickly, Faith, is there a way for that oil to get to market other than through the north?
There are other options that could go through Kenya or other ways. So they've been talking about that, and it would be great if
but they
find
they don't currently have
that.
Pipelines that they'd have to be laid, and maybe the Chinese would help with that. Talk to me about Samantha Power very quickly, if you would, Faith McDonald.
I'm actually worried about that commission. I'm sure you are too, Frank, because their idea of how to prevent atrocities usually involves putting people like the people who are now in charge of Egypt in power, or the people who are in charge of Libya. And I can see, you know, even if things were to happen where it looked like there would be opposition forces taking over in Sudan, it would be the wrong forces. Hassan al-Turabi is still in play and is saying that his party could negotiate between the South and the North. I could just see a nightmare happening there.
Yeah. Well, and again, the people that you're referring to are in Libya and in Egypt and to some extent at least in Khartoum and certainly elsewhere, Islamists who share this Sharia ideology. And you're absolutely right, as we've documented in our new course, Faith McDonald, as you know so well, Muslim Brotherhood in America, The Enemy Within, there is an unbelievable amount of penetration and influence being exercised by such people inside the Obama administration and from the outside to it. So these are all matters of grave concern. We will be following them closely, as I know will you. Faith McDonald, keep up the good work, and please keep coming back to us with updates as to what is happening there and what light it sheds on what is happening here as well.
I sure will.
Thanks so much for joining us. Next up, we will speak with Congressman Mike Turner, one of the leaders in the national security arena, about what the Obama administration is doing to hurt us in another area, our nuclear deterrent. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Obama-Biden campaign marked the first anniversary of the liquidation of Osama bin Laden in an appalling yet telling way. It used former President Bill Clinton to extol his successor's role in the mission and quoted selectively Republican nominee Mitt Romney to suggest he would not have done the same. Never mind that Mr. Clinton repeatedly declined to take out bin Laden. What Governor Romney said in context was absolutely correct. Quote, "I wouldn't want to over-concentrate on bin Laden. He's one of many, many people who are involved in this global jihadist effort. He's by no means the only leader. It's a very diverse group. Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood, and of course different names throughout the world." Unquote. Getting bin Laden isn't the issue. Getting the rest of the threat right is. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at SecureFreedomRadio.com.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope and life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
That smells good.
Well, look who came out of his man cave.
Game must be over.
Oh, babe, just checking on you. And dinner.
Well, your stomach clock is fast. It's gonna be a while. How about some celery?
Nah, that's rabbit food. There must be something good in here.
Well, why don't you... why don't you...
You okay?
Oh.
Honey!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke. Many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk. But it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Congressman Mike Turner, a man I've come to admire tremendously as chairman of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee of the House Armed Services Committee. He also serves on the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. He represents Ohio's 3rd Congressional District and has done so with distinction since 2003. And we catch him as his subcommittee has just completed the first stage of the process of building the annual defense authorization bill with a unanimous, as I understand it, approval by that subcommittee of your recommendations with respect to strategic forces and missile defense and related issues. And Congressman Turner, congratulations on that, especially since, as I understand it, you've put into that legislation some rather robust, criticisms, if not criticisms. You've offered a very different view of some of these things from that of the administration. Give us some of the highlights, if you would, of what's in your markup.
Sure. I think probably the most important aspect of this, Frank, is that the administration came forward when they were asking for Senate approval for the new START agreement with proposals and benchmarks of funding levels for our nuclear deterrent, things that we needed to do if we were going to safely go to lower numbers. They came forward and specifically stated that, you know, the lower numbers in the new START agreement themselves would not be achievable absent an investment in our nuclear weapons infrastructure and our nuclear deterrent. So what we have done is held the administration accountable. We are putting the money back in and funding what the president's original plan was that the president is trying to walk away from. Now, what's of concern is, you know, this is a president that's publicly made the statement of, you know, we on the road to zero, that we should eliminate all nuclear weapons. But their work that we see is, you know, largely affecting our deterrent, our nuclear arsenal and our nuclear capability, and that clearly weakens our national security and makes us less safe.
Right. Well, it's a sort of variation on the lead from behind strategy in Libya. It's lead when there's nobody behind, I guess, is what they're really doing. And you know, I was struck, we had a briefing from Mackenzie Eaglin of the American Enterprise Institute last week up on Capitol Hill, Congressman Turner, and boy, she laid out some of the things that are going to be done to our deterrent. Cutting the follow-on for our strategic submarines, deferring the long-range bomber, eliminating the ICBM force, deferring the chemical facility that's needed to ensure the future viability of the pits in our deterrent forces. And then there's missile defense. And in each of these areas, it seems as though there's these sorts of unilateral steps are not being reciprocated by any of our prospective adversaries. And to the contrary, we really are engaging in a kind of unilateral disarmament. Let's talk a bit about this missile defense piece particularly, because I know you've been at the cutting edge of trying to ensure that we maintain such defenses as we have and enhance them. What do you do in your markup and what really needs to be done here?
Well, one of the things that we're looking at, of course, is that, you know, contrary to the administration's justification for lower numbers of merely looking to Russia, it is to grapple with this issue that the world is becoming a less safe place, that regimes such as Iran, North Korea are seeking nuclear weapons capabilities. You have, you know, Pakistan and India continuing in their, of course, pursuit for larger numbers and greater capability and technology. Of course, China remains a player. We've taken a look at the issue of, well, what do we have to do in addition to having a strong nuclear deterrent to look at ways in which we can keep the homeland safe. Now, this administration, when they came in, they immediately axed President Bush's plan of putting missile defenses in Europe that would protect our homeland and rolled out a plan, the phased adaptive approach, where they said that their plan would eventually protect the homeland in 2020 by a system that's, you know, yet to be invented, yet to be made, and is speculative as to its capabilities.
Against an Iranian threat that is coming on faster than 2020, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And in 2020 was their best guess as to when they'd be able to deliver it, and it certainly will follow after the threat. So what we've done is said we need to refocus again on the issue of homeland security, making certain that the continental United States is protected. So with that, both the missile defense system that we have in Alaska, we're looking at expanding that, where the president has been looking to contract it, and also looking to invest in this ground-based system, the only system that we have that actually defends the homeland from ICBMs, and then opening up the discussion of, the United States needs an East Coast site. All studies and people who look at the emerging threats believe that we need, both in Alaska and on the East Coast, a missile defense capability in order to address the potential of an ICBM attack on the United States. So we've put in our bill the beginning of seeking that East Coast site.
Yeah. One of the things that we've heard recently, Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio is our guest chairman of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee of the House Armed Services Committee, is that the Raytheon warhead on that ground-based long-range missile defense system is defective. This seems to be, at least with respect to a certain vintage of these. What's the story on that, and how much concern do you have about it?
Well, there are actually two phases of our ground-based missile defense system. The first phase of the missiles that we have in the silos are absolutely proven, capable, and have no defects. The second phase are ones where we have concerns, where there have been some failures in testing. We're putting additional dollars toward fixing those problems to ensure that that not only that they would be effective, but they would be even exceed the capabilities of the phase one for the missile. This
basically a quality control manufacturing problem, or is there something systemic?
No, I believe that they have located all of the issues and errors, and they are correctable and they are being corrected.
Good. Well, thank God for that. Speaking of China, yes. Congressman Turner, we have, of course, hundreds of people apparently descending on the Chinese this week. The nature of these conversations might be roiled a bit by this dissident who's managed to free himself. But one of the topics that seems to be likely a prominent one in this agenda for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and for her counterpart at the Treasury, Tim Geithner, is an effort to expand trade with the Chinese, specifically selling space-related technologies, despite the fact that both the State Department and Defense Department, as you know, have issued in a report to you all, I think, a warning that such technologies might well wind up in the wrong hands. You've expressed concerns specifically about North Korea getting some of China's technology with, I think, Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense. How serious a problem is this, and should we, in fact, be expanding trade exports of very sensitive dual-use technology to China?
Well, I think we should be very concerned, because what we see, ultimately, is that when we sell high-end technology that we're utilizing for military capability, that others seek to use it similarly, that they also want to apply them to military purposes, and that of course weakens our national security and makes us less safe. So, basic logic would tell you that's something you don't want to do. Now, with North Korea, most recently, when they've had their failed missile test, they showcased a new road-based mobile ICBM. It is a missile that Secretary Gates had warned about that could have capability of striking mainland United States. With their nuclear weapons capability, it absolutely puts the United States at risk. It is a concern, obviously, with its mobility, of being able to locate it and what we might be able to do to address it if there was a conflict. When that road-based ICBM, mobile ICBM, was showcased, it appeared as if there was Chinese-based manufactured contributions to that. We raised that issue with the State Department. The State Department has responded, and I asked Secretary Panetta himself, does he believe that China is assisting North Korea in their missile program? And he said that he believed that there was some assistance that was occurring.
Yeah, I'm shocked. That's all I can say. Congressman, I'm afraid we have to leave it at that for today, but I hope you'll come back to us. This is the vital work that you're doing with the Strategic Forces Subcommittee, and I think on so many of these issues, particularly with respect to maintaining an effective nuclear deterrent and assuring that if all else fails, we've got the insurance policy of effective missile defenses. It's truly the Lord's work. We thank you for doing it, and we thank you for your periodic reports here. Come back to us again very soon, if you would.
Thank you for highlighting this. It's an important issue.
It is indeed. Next up, Gordon Chang joins us. We'll get his take on this dissident business and much, much more. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Well, in the morning and out to school. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Gordon Chang is our guest this hour to talk about some of the developments that we are witnessing in China that may have quite important overtones, quite far beyond China at the moment, as is often the case. Specifically, we have, Gordon, a bit of a thrash going on as we speak about a chap by the name of Chen Guangcheng. Tell us about him, what he's precipitating in the way of something of a crisis between these two countries.
Chen is a blind activist. He's a self-trained lawyer, and he brought the whole issue of forced sterilizations and forced abortions to the fore in China because he was representing people who had been hurt by those. And he was detained and eventually jailed by the Chinese authorities on trumped-up charges. And since his release about 20 months ago, he's been under severe house arrest, with both him and his wife being brutalized by security forces. He
Including beatings, as I understand it.
All the time. all the time, Frank. And he managed to escape from a very heavy security cordon around his home. He made his way to Beijing with the help of a dissident network. And this is amazing. Mm. He somehow snuck into the American embassy or an American compound of some sort, and he is now under the protection of American officials.
Mm. And, Gordon, I'm so glad you brought up the cause that brought him such notoriety as far as the Communist Chinese are concerned. We've talked about it in the past, but it's worth maybe having a further visit about what this business, this one-child policy, involves. I've been a great admirer of a woman by the name of Reggie Littlejohn, who you may know, who is doing some really important work here in the United States on this subject, trying to help impress upon us, how brutally repressive this practice is, but how potentially dangerous it can be, not just for the Chinese people, but for us.
It's horrific, Frank. It is so awful, because we're not only talking about the forced sterilization and abortions that Chen has raised, but we're also talking about murder, because after live births, in the first minutes of life, children in China are killed by population control officials. And this has gone on. The authorities know about it. So this is a planned program of murder.
Yeah. And I guess what I'm getting at with respect to Reggie's work is that she describes it as an unbelievably intrusive form of totalitarianism, that women are, invasively checked by these family planning authorities to make sure that they're not pregnant, that they're abiding by the one-child policy. And it's hard to imagine what all is involved. By the way, if you're interested in more on this subject, folks, check out Women's Rights Without Frontiers, which is Reggie's operation. But Gordon, the reason I say it's a danger to us, and why I think we should all be so appreciative of Chen Guangcheng's work, is to the extent that this has resulted in a huge population of young men for whom there are no women, because they typically are the ones that are aborted under a one-child policy. It creates conditions that could well feed into social engineering or aggressive policies by the Chinese, shouldn't they?
Well, first of all, there's the prostitution, trafficking women, HIV that this policy causes. But there's also this issue of bare branches that you refer to. Bare branches refers to unmarriageable males. And because of this policy, we have one of the most abnormal sex ratios in China. The Chinese government says officially that their sex ratio is 117 males for every 100 females, whereas the global average is about 106 or 103 males for every 100 females at birth. And this means that there are many, many males, perhaps as many as 51 million excess males in China today. And people are worried about the social instability that this causes. People worry that the Chinese leadership will create military misadventure abroad to use up these excess males. And also, there is a theory that excess males impedes democratization because they make societies unstable. And so authoritarian systems are generally thought to be the only ones that can contain excess males. That's not true, but that's the general theory. So you have all sorts of ills that are perhaps created by the one-child policy. And in the past, Chinese past, going back hundreds and hundreds of years, bare branches have created and destroyed Chinese dynasties. And in the 19th century, we had armies of bare branches running across China, which it helped bring down the last dynasty.
Interesting. So there is historical precedent in China itself.
Absolutely.
Gordon
right.
Chang is our guest, of course. He is the author of The Coming Collapse of China. Prescient book, if ever there were one. He is also a columnist at Forbes.com. He writes routinely for other publications, most especially World Affairs Journal, but the Weekly Standard, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and so on. And is a regular featured guest, I'm very pleased to say, here with us at Secure Freedom Radio. Gordon, let me just ask you, there is at this same moment, of course, a huge entourage of American officials led by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Secretary of Treasury Timothy Geithner descending on Beijing for the annual conclave where they try to promote U.S.-Chinese relations. How will this dissident episode play in all of that, do you think, and how should the U.S. be handling it?
I think that we have, as you mentioned, the strategic and economic dialogue coming up. This has been periodic going back to the Bush administration, and this series of talks has produced very little in the way of progress for the United States. You have administration officials right now saying that the Chen matter might disrupt these talks. Well, I say hooray, because perhaps the less that we talk to the Chinese, the better that we will be. Right now, we have Assistant Secretary of State Campbell in Beijing. The State Department won't acknowledge he's there, even though there are pictures of him in a Beijing hotel. It shows how scared we are about matters like Chen, because we think that it will disrupt our relations with China. But our relations with China have not been good, and what the Chinese have been using is this dialogue to prevent any real progress and to prevent any sort of efforts on our part to try to maintain peace in the international system. So this is we really need to rethink our relations with China, and we need to stand firmly behind Chen.
I guess what you're really saying, distilled to its essence, Gordon, is that when we behave as though we are frightened of the Chinese or we are submitting to them, it is only going to make it the case that we'll get more bad behavior out of them. This is the fundamental rule of bullying, I think, 101, that you reward that kind of bad behavior and you do, in fact, get more of it. Gordon, let me just quickly ask you a couple of other things that are on top of my mind. One is that the Chinese clearly expect the Obama administration, in the course of these strategic dialogue talks or on the margins of them, to be given access to more advanced space-related technology that they seem quite keen to export from the United States, as the Obama administration seems quite keen to have it sold to them, despite warnings, ironically, from Hillary Clinton's own department, the Department of State and the Defense Department, that such technology might wind up in the wrong hands. Quickly, tell us what you think about this idea of export controls being again, sacrificed in the interest of this same kind of coddling of the Chinese.
Because there is no civilian Chinese space program, what we are doing, in effect, is just transferring technology to the Chinese military. And so I don't see any purpose for this. It is certainly contrary to the interests of the United States. I'd like to use the word ludicrous. I don't know if that's permitted on the program, but nonetheless, this
feel
is
free.
Monstrous. This is awful. And I'm just sort of, there are a few things that really leave me speechless, but this is one of them.
Yeah. Well, you'll be pleased to know that in the previous segment with Congressman Mike Turner, he felt very strongly as well about this. And I think, again, in both cases, properly so. We are on notice, folks, that this technology is going to be used to harm us, perhaps in terms of our access to space, perhaps in terms of our use of space, perhaps in terms of what's going on here on planet Earth. And to be persisting in it, especially, Gordon Chang, as you know, against the backdrop of past hard experience with the Chinese using such space technologies to our grave detriment, including now fielding MIRVed ICBMs, intercontinental range ballistic missiles with multiple warheads against us. This is not just ludicrous, my friend. This is reckless in the extreme. Gordon Chang, as always, we appreciate so much your comments, and we'll be following closely Chen Guangcheng's, his fate. And let's hope it's a good one, because he's doing God knows Lord's work, as are you, my friend. We'll talk with you again soon. We'll talk with the rest of you, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.